the Strategic Hot Box with Dr. Brandi Love Stankovic, discussing leadership, business, and how to take control of your life and achieve greatness. From the streets of Las Vegas, energized, informed, and never diluted, it's time to kick some ass.
Hey, it's your girl, Dr. Brandi Stankovic. Welcome back to the Strategic Hot Box. I'm excited to have a great episode with my friend Jonathan Silk here today. We're going to talk about Army Command to civilian leadership. And we're also going to talk about transitions. And what does that mean? And how do we adapt? And how do we build? And how do we just essentially kick ass? So welcome. Let's get started. As you know, here on the Strategic Hot Box, we learn, we love, and we kick ass. Those are our segments, you could say. That is my philosophy. That's the way I try to live life, and I want to share that with you. So in the Learn section, we're going to talk a little bit about this topic. What does it mean to transition? What does it mean for people that have gone from one major focus of their lives, all intensive focus of their lives, and transitioning to a different part of their lives? And then in the Love section, we'll have a conversation with almost Dr. Silk, on our way to becoming Dr. Silk, and about what that means from an Army perspective or a military perspective. And then in Kick-Ass, we'll give you some tools you need to start doing something differently today, because that's what it's all about. So often we'll have people say, oh, I've read that book, or oh, I've done this, or I've taken a class in that. And that's great if you've done something about it. But so often people will learn things and then just walk away with just knowing something. And that's not what I want you to do. I want you to know something and act on it. And that's the key here at the Strategic Hot Box. So when it comes to transitions, there'll be transitions that'll happen all throughout your lives. So even those of us that are listening or watching today that haven't been involved in the military or haven't been involved maybe in a high-level leadership position, you have gone through transitions. Maybe you've been promoted. Maybe you've gone from job to job. And sometimes those leadership transitions is a progression and it's a choice. And you say, I want that next job or I want that transition. And you choose that and you go after it and maybe you plan for it. And then other times you get hit in the face with transitions and you have to collect yourself mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually and say, I didn't choose this. Maybe you got fired. Maybe you got hurt. Maybe, you know, anything like that, that have come up in your life where you weren't planning on making a transition and it was forced. So what do you do then when the transition is unknown? And how can you prepare yourself? How can you contingency plan without then planning all the time for all these things to happen and living in a state of fear? And you'd think that when it comes to the military, especially in the United States, that we would help our officers, anybody involved in the military, anybody that's ever served, you'd think we'd help those people, those individuals more than we do. And yet from the transition from military to civilian jobs, so often that is stated as being one of the hardest things that soldiers will go through is getting a job or getting that next step into civilian life. And we'll learn a lot more about that from Jonathan. There are organizations like Walmart and Starbucks and other very large ones that are still hiring, you know, as many veterans as they possibly can. But we do have a stat for you, and I'd love to hear if you agree with this. That 69% state that finding a job after serving is one of the hardest parts about transitioning. So 69%, so that's a lot. And that transition, so again, whether it was forced or it was known because retirement's coming up, et cetera, it's like, what do you do? How do you apply those skills? How do you not feel bad for it? I have somebody that's working on my team in a new position that I have now that I was just learning about them in the last couple days. And they said that they had served in the Army and in a lot of air traffic and that kind of piece. And so they had a lot of really good technical and mathematical skills and a lot of organizational skills, even some project management. And I believe all those skills have come from where they were in air traffic control. And yet when they were describing this experience to me, it was almost apologetic. So I spent a bunch of time in the military and I did this and yeah, everything was down that path. And I'm like, what? That's amazing. You should be stating that to me as if you went to an Ivy League school, because that kind of experience is so much more discipline oriented than anybody that went to a community college and drank too much. Right? I mean, let's be real. Right? So when it comes to some of that, we got to stop apologizing. We have to support our soldiers, support our veterans, and support anybody that's serving in that capacity in the best way that we can. Because I believe, and this is opinion for me, that the greatest skill set comes from those that have gone through that experience in whatever capacity that looks like, you know, however people serve. And that's discipline, right? Boot camp and some of those other disciplines and the schooling and things that go in after that are so much harder than your freshman year at college. Right? Organizational leadership, being a part of a greater team, but also being able to say yes, or in this case, yes, sir, yeah. Yes, ma'am, right? Because of the fact that in business, so many times I will have people say, well, I'm just going to be rebellious. At the end of the day, what the CEO says goes. And that has to be the way. And sometimes that respect isn't learned, isn't earned in the way that it should be in regular kind of business life. So how does this transition occur from military personnel? How do recruiters and organizations get more involved and help and hire veterans? And I want to bring our subject matter expert in now to formally talk to us about some of this. So I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Jonathan Silk. You are the founder of Quick Smarts Leadership and talent development. So you have this organization, you're a former Army officer, and assistant professor at the U.S. Military Academy, West Point. Pretty amazing. You are a board member of both the Fort Worth Business Assistance Center and the Association for Talent Development. You've got your bachelor's in business, you have your MBA, you've got a master's in learning technology, and now you're going for your doctorate. Because, I mean, like, you've just been lazy your whole life, so you're like, why don't you just get a doctorate or something? But it's so exciting. So you're getting a doctorate at Pepperdine, the Graduate School of Education Psychology, where I, you know, would like to say go waves. Go waves. And you've also got certificates from Columbia and Stanford. So just like I was saying before, you know, you have that military background, which I consider to be Ivy League, and you've also got a whole bunch of the Ivy League-esque education as well. So thank you for being here. Welcome.
Thank you, Brandy. It's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your journey in leadership.
So there I was.
It was a dark, stormy night.
It was. It started that way. I told my parents back in 1987 that I didn't want to go to college right away. Mm. And, you know, my dad was an academic and my mom as well. So that wasn't received very well. But I had this incredible relationship with my grandfather, who was an officer in World War II, and loved his stories, mm-hmm. loved his leadership stories. Anyway, I entered the Army, meant to be as a 3-year break between high school and college. And like 1 year into the Army, I loved it. And that's really where, you know, the Army's laser beam focus on developing all its soldiers, not just officers or you know, non-commissioned officers, all its soldiers to lead. Because the profession, the Army profession, is inherently dangerous. In combat, you could be instantly hired. If someone gets wounded or hurt, the next person has to be ready to assume leadership at any moment.
Absolutely.
So your whole time in the military, you're being developed, at least in the Army, you're being developed to lead. So I had that experience, like early 1989. I was stationed in Virginia, and it was like we're out in the woods, about, you know, 20 degrees, and I got an opportunity to lead a small fire team, about 4 soldiers. And, you know, went on this mission. It was miserable. We're carrying a lot of weight. It was like probably about like 42 degrees, mm-hmm. this mixture of like snow and rain is terrible. Mm-hmm. But we accomplished the mission and absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
And after that, I was hooked. I was like, I want to keep doing this. And then, you know, I stayed in the Army, reenlisted, went to Korea, had some other great leadership experiences in 1990 during Desert Storm. I was in Korea. Wow. The Americans at that time still patrolled the demilitarized zone. Mm-hmm. So we're out there. I was again a fire team leader leading patrols along the demilitarized zone. There's North Korean forces on the other side of the border, but you know there's mines out there and other things, and just really
scary.
People, you know, lives are depending on you.
Right.
So I love the responsibility that came with it. Mm-hmm. So just continuing my journey in the Army. Rose in rank and responsibility. I had this incredible experience, again, in a very miserable place, Fort Polk, Louisiana. So mm-hmm. any veterans that are listening will relate to this. But it was February 1999, and I was a staff sergeant, and I was serving on the role in a leadership position where I was in charge of about 30 soldiers. And we had a platoon leader who was an officer, and we were doing miles warfare is what we called it, but it's like basically laser tag.
Mm-hmm.
So we're
basically laser tag.
Yeah, so you wear this harness. wear this harness that's on your over your chest and uh-huh. around your helmet. So if the enemy opposition forces shoot at you, it emits a laser, and if you beep, you know you've been hit.
Mm-hmm.
So the platoon leader was assessed as a casualty. He had been hit. So I stepped into his role,
uh-huh.
and at this point in time, I was leading about 55 soldiers. We had some attachments. Anyway, we moved on this objective, and we were very successful. And I was like, I love this.
Mm-hmm.
So I was still enlisted at the time. I realized that time I wanted to become an officer.
Mm-hmm.
As an officer in the Army, your role is to plan operations, these real big operations,
mm-hmm.
And develop that, and then and build it. You know, you own the whole organization. So that was like the catalyst for me to start seek to become an officer, commissioned officer in the Army. After that, I continued my, at the same time, I started really focusing on my college education. The Army had plenty of opportunities to go to school.
That's amazing.
Got enough credits, I went to officer candidate school. I was commissioned in, right after the war started in 2003, I was commissioned. I entered officer candidate school in 2002, commissioned as the armor officer.
Mm-hmm.
And after some basic training, I went to Iraq as a scout platoon leader.
Wow.
So we're initially in the Baghdad area,
mm-hmm.
doing a lot of different, patrols, like convoy security, things like that. And then about a week before we were supposed to come home, so this was early April, we're supposed to drive out of the country April 11th, which was Easter Sunday. There's a Shia militia, the Mahdi militia. They started this rebellion in southern Iraq. And they were Shia. And they, like, the whole southern Iraq just lit on fire, basically. And then at the same time, you had, like, Fallujah, the Sunnis were, there's a lot of operations going on in Sunni. So at that time, it seems like the whole country just, like, lit up at one time.
Mm-hmm.
So we got extended and went from Baghdad down into southern Iraq. And we're conducting operations against the Shia militia, the Mahdi militia. And there was really, it was interesting because the first, most of our time there, we had never really taken direct fire or anything. Well, we were given a mission to seize a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And, and in an operation, we got intelligence that there's no enemy on the bridge. We're just supposed to occupy the bridge and prevent enemy forces from taking it themselves. But it turns out intelligence was wrong.
Oh,
there were enemy on the bridge, and we got into a pretty big fight on the bridge.
So you went into it, and they said that there was nobody there on the bridge. The intelligence had said that, and then going into that, it was wrong, and you were met with attack.
Yes, there was enemy on the bridge, so there's a pretty big fight. I myself, 9 of my soldiers were wounded. Thankfully, none of them were killed in action. And I was wounded myself.
Wow.
But we succeeded in our mission. And that was a huge learning event for me.
I'm sure.
The results of my injury, it was an internal injury. I took a hit in the chest during the fight. I had my body armor on, and then I actually got back up.
Wow.
So people ask me why I got back up. I kind of had to. I was a platoon leader at the time. But
why did you get back up? Because you were being shot at, right? And your team and your entire platoon.
So the first 5 minutes of this, we moved across the bridge expecting, again, no resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And the enemy was there, and we got in a huge fight. So within that first 5 minutes, it was total chaos. So I knew, my role as a platoon leader, I had to get my platoon back in the fight, assess the situation. And in that, for those first few minutes, I was, I realized I had to get back up. No one else was going to do it if it wasn't for me.
Right.
Got my, assessed my soldiers at that point in time. I had two of my gun trucks, my Humvees were destroyed. They'd been hit by Rockefeller grenades. The amount of fire coming in was insane. To this day, it was like an electric light show, but,
And no laser tag can prepare you for that.
Yeah, exactly. So,
no doubt.
Just the overwhelming of the senses, but. Quickly, this is where training kicks in.
Sure.
Like we had been, I talked about back in 1999, those miserable experiences in very cold weather adversity. You're dealing with adversity. You're ready for that. And it allows you to quickly recover and become adaptable. And that's what my unit that day, we were very adaptable. We were wearing night vision technology. This because we have superior technology. The insurgents that were on the other side didn't have that. But when we came across the bridge, they had turned the spotlights that were on this building on us and immediately blinded us out. So they were, our enemies in the world are very smart.
Sure.
And they will adapt and try to disrupt us just like we try to do
the
to
same.
Them. So mm-hmm. very quickly, based on training stuff, though, I got my platoon back in the fight, and we adapted. We shot out the lights, evacuated our wounded, and then maneuvered on the positions, and we ended up seizing the bridge. And
can I take this moment, and I apologize that I didn't do it further, and say thank you for your service?
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yay. And for those of us that are listening, and for those of our listeners that are from different countries, and those that serve their militaries in their countries, this is just a moment to say the sacrifice that all of them make. For those here in the United States, it's almost making me emotional. And in other countries, thank you.
I appreciate that. So after that, so the next day, I'm just going to talk a little about the next day we got relieved. Another unit came on the bridge, and we went back to our base to rearm, refuel, checked on my wounded. And I took my vest off, and I had a big bruise on my chest.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think anything of it. I'm like, I'm good.
From being shot at.
Yeah.
Right.
And from taking a hit in the chest. And so I stayed, we were deployed. We got extended about 3.5 months and then got back home. When I got back home, back to Louisiana, I was stationed at Fort Polk. Then we, we started our regular garrison life, physical fitness, things like that. And I was sucking. My level of fitness was not increasing that with my soldiers.
No.
I was like, what's wrong with me? You know,
uh-huh.
Kind of like a warrior mindset. It's gotta be me.
Right.
Stop being a wuss, keep up. And, I was dealing with hearing loss, tinnitus. So I went in for my hearing loss, and, they do a brain MRI to make sure there's no brain tumor. And there wasn't, but a brain tumor can cause your ears to ring. So they said, one thing led to another. It led to a cardiologist. They did an echo of my heart. And the cardiologist comes back and says, hey, did you take any trauma to the chest in Iraq? And I was like, yeah. And I told him the story. And it turned out that this was probably about 5 to 6 months after. But it turns out what I got hit with, the concussion, the energy from the impact tore my mitral valve in my heart.
Wow.
So I had my heart was pumping. The mitral valve was torn. About 60% of the blood was going out into the system. 40% was staying in a chamber. It's called a mitral valve prolapse.
Uh-huh.
And that was really why I was sucking on the
energy,
run.
So
that point in time, they're like, stop all physical activity.
Right.
And that really hit me hard. Because I got back, I remember back to that the next morning, April 10th,
mm-hmm.
After we got relieved, I just had a bruise on the chest. I thought I was good. I got home with all my arms and legs.
Sure.
And they're like, you're going to have surgery. Well, we're going to have surgery. We're going to try and repair it. If not, we'll replace it.
Wow.
It's like my whole life
changed.
At that point stopped.
Yeah.
And I was just like, holy cow.
Right.
So at this point in time, there's a lot of things working in my favor. I didn't quite see it. In hindsight, I was very blessed.
Right.
So because I was in Central Louisiana, I made it back. I didn't get sent to Walter Reed for surgery. They just said, okay, we're gonna send it off. They couldn't do it on base, so they sent me to Alexandria, Hospital in Alexandria. And turns out, if you're gonna have heart surgery, Central Louisiana is one of the best places due to the high rates of obesity and heart disease.
Oh, why?
So the surgeons there are top notch. The surgeon I had was actually a former Army surgeon, and he had been certified in this non-invasive technique where they don't cut your chest, they go through your rib cage.
Oh, wow.
So all this was working in my favor. I didn't realize. I was in a very dark space at this moment. I was like, I wanted to continue my Army career. I wanted to go back to combat. Things like that. And anyway, so I had surgery and they had to replace my mitral valve. They couldn't repair it. So then I started, after that, they told me, hey, you're going to get you're going to be a disabled veteran.
It's going to change. And your life changed.
It did change. And that, when I woke up, the first thing I asked was, what happened to my valve?
Right.
And they said, we had to replace it.
Man. So was there an unexpected learning then in this? And, as you made that transition?
Yes, that it's absolutely, it's up to us. We control our lives.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a very dark space for a very long time, but with the help of family, community, and friends, I got yanked out of it. I realized, so I was in a why me? I was in a very sorry,
anybody would, anybody would.
Why me? Why this happened to me? I realized I had to switch the mindset from why me to it starts with me.
Oh.
And I went through this transition mental and I was like, it was, someone just, really jumping in my ass saying, not putting up with my bad attitude, you're total control of this. So That really helped. I got back in before I deployed. I was a triathlete, so I started getting back in endurance sports, and eventually I recovered. Great recovery, and eventually went in April of 2009. I did the New Orleans Half Ironman.
Did you really? Wow. Right away. So you just jumped for it. That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that story and what powerful lessons and learnings that you had along the way. Do you have some kind of bold action items or takeaways for the people that are listening?
Yeah, I got very in touch with my purpose. Like, what was my authentic leadership purpose? When I was teaching at West Point, we went through a faculty development workshop that focused on your authentic leadership purpose in life. And it was incredibly powerful for me. And I'm just going to read what mine
Please
is.
Please do.
Because this was another life-changing moment for me. It's why I decided to become a civilian. But with Steely...
You decided to become a civilian. Good. It was a choice. Love
but,
it.
But it was with steely determination I inspire others to discover the fire that fuels their desire to lead. And it's something that fires me up is I love leader development. I love... Everything I've done and all my leadership positions has been focused on developing both my soldiers at every level to lead. And I love seeing others develop and grow as leaders. And I went through this workshop and discovered it was an intense 3-day workshop. It was with the Authentic Leadership Institute out of Harvard. But it really focused me on what was important in life. And I realized my identity was not just as a warrior, someone serving in the Army. Mm-hmm. My identity was really a leader developer. Mm-hmm. And as a leader developer, I didn't have to wear the uniform. I could wear any uniform, and I could do it in any profession.
Sure.
So that focused me at that point in time. I said, you know what? I want to transition out of the Army and continue my upward trajectory of learning. I felt if I stayed in the Army longer, I would just plateau. But so this is like part of my leadership, my learning.
You want to know what fuels the fire for
yes.
people. That's amazing.
So, and then it helped you discover it. And then, I'm perfectly... That's what I love about coaching is tapping in, having people discover their fire, mm-hmm. and then let them loose. It's almost like when I coach or work with teams or something, it's like they're a can of soda,
mm-hmm.
and there's a ton of energy. You're just shaking it up as a coach, getting that fire. There's a whole chemical reaction happening there,
mm-hmm.
and you pop the top and direct it.
Yeah,
and there they go.
Right.
So
do you have kind of like something that somebody could implement right now to help uncover what that is?
Yes. There's a great book. There's actually two great books I'd recommend, True North,
mm-hmm.
and there's a True North Field. It's like the field book.
Mm-hmm.
So read True North, and then it'll give you the concepts of finding your purpose. And then the True North Field book goes through the exercises that I did in the workshop. And at the end of it, it's intense.
So stick to it. Go through the exercises.
And then go through all the exercises, and you're going to come out with like a one or two sentence statement. That is you.
Right.
That I encourage you do the work around that, and then realign your life around that.
And then they can call you.
Exactly.
And you'll shake up their soda.
Exactly. Create a reaction and pop the tap and see what happens.
I love that. That's amazing. If people wanted to get a hold of you to learn more about you, how could they do that?
They can visit my website, quicksmartsleadership.com. They can email me at jonathan.silk@quicksmartsleadership.com. I'm also love social media. I'm on Twitter as Frontline Leader, and also on LinkedIn. I love to share what I'm learning, both in through life and also in the doctoral program on both mm-hmm. those platforms.
That's amazing. And so, do you have to kind of send us off with a quick funny story or something that you could share?
Yes. So, in the context of combat, I found this is funny.
Okay. It scares me with these.
We were doing combat operations in the city of Kufa, and we were it was a pretty intense fight. And so I needed to get up above, get on the balcony so I could see the terrain where the enemy forces were and then maneuver my guys. So we took over a house, and as we're moving through the house, we came across this Iraqi family.
Mm-hmm.
And my soldiers really, they were very scared. There's rounds hitting the building. We were being shot at, and we needed to get to the roof. But this family presented, immediately we thought they were a threat. But I could see how scared they were. So what I did is told my soldiers they were about to secure them. I said, stop, let's search the house, make sure there were no weapons. There were none. So then we did. So again, we're taking fire. What we did, I wanted to secure them through. So through my interpreter, I just told them, "Hey, we're gonna make sure your family's safe." And like we all do as a kid, we built them a fort. We got all the mattresses and stuff in the house and put them all in a central location and built this like mattress fort.
With sheets and things around.
So anyway, we did that for them, and then we got up on the roof and stayed in the fight. Well, at one point I sent my soldiers down to get more ammunition from our gun trucks. And the Iraqi man, he was so grateful for what we did. He had made, so again, we're taking fire, there's rounds hitting his house. He made chai tea for us, and he was serving us. So he's serving my soldiers. It was just very bizarre. And I laughed because it was like in the middle of combat, you know, we went out of our way to take care of him, but he returned
there.
A favor. So it was incredible.
That is incredible.
So in the context of combat,
I think that I would have had to be there to absorb the humor in that completely. But I can relate to making a fort, in my living room. So thank you for sharing that. Thank you for all the things that you did in the field as well as in the field now as a soldier and as a civilian. I really appreciate it, and I'm really excited about learning more about your leadership. So thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Let's head out to our shout out.
Hey, I'm Andrew. I'm in a metal band. And you're listening to Brandy on the Strategic Hotbox.
Thank you to Andrew, and thank you to Jonathan for being here as our guest today. And I'd like to now transition and talk to you about some ways that you can start kicking ass. So we learned a lot of little nuggets from Jonathan, and I'd like to kind of pull them all together into our top five. So it's my time, my favorite time, your favorite time. It's time to kick some ass. Number one is to be adaptable. We learned about it both in the field as well as is now after you've been hurt, what do you do and adapt to change and kind of make that decision to not be woe is me, but to be proactive in how you're going to change other people's lives, but also be adaptable in the moment. So you go to a bridge and you're getting enemy fire, right? And so we may not be able to relate to that from a soldier standpoint, but if you can from a leader standpoint, how many times have you gone to work and have been hit with enemy fire? I mean, think about it. There's so often that we think something is one way and it ends up being another, and we have to be able to think on our feet and adapt. Number two is to keep learning. You said it perfectly, and I'm sure your parents are so happy that you're returning back to the scholastic world. But all throughout the steps, every step along the way, we have to learn, absorb that knowledge. And so next time you're going into it from a more informed approach. I think learning is everything. I want to continue to learn for the rest of my life. My young son said to me the other day, well, the person's in it. Why do you teach adults? I thought you were done with school once you hit 12th grade. And it was like, oh. Ho-ho, don't I have so much to share as far as that I want you learning for the rest of your life. Number three is prepare for the worst. And hope for the best, of course, but preparing for the worst, because going through those activities that you were sharing, the training, preparing for some of these things to occur can get you, like you said, when you got into that field in combat, your brain immediately goes back to, I've been trained for this. What is it how do I go forth? How do I go to my instinct? The more that you keep learning and prepare for the worst and be adaptable, the more that your instinct, your gut instinct will become those things naturally. Number four is to reframe adversity. And so it's not necessarily the end of your life. It's the end of that chapter of your life, right? When it comes to reframing, things are going to happen in your life. Shit happens. And if you sit down and just smell it for the rest of your life, that's on you. It is time for you to get up and reframe that and say, how is this going to make me stronger for the rest of my life? How can I take these things that I've learned in this darkness that I've felt, this pain that I've felt, and say, what can I do then to make sure others don't feel that? Or to share with others the love that they need to be the best that they can be, to fuel their fire. And number five is to strike fast, right? You got to think fast. You got to move fast. You got to kick ass. And I hear that's what you're out there doing is making people kick ass. And that's what we want you to do. Strike fast and kick ass. That's your top five. So thank you again to Jonathan for being here. I loved your stories. Thanks for making me emotional, pal. I really hate those moments on the hot box, but I really do feel very thankful for you and for those that are out here from other countries. I know that you feel the same for those that serve your countries as well. So if you want us to tackle any thoughts for you here on the hot box, please hit us up at thestrategichotbox.com or podcast@strategichotbox. We'll put Jonathan's information out there, and you'll have all of our info. You can hit us up on Twitter at BrandiLove, B-R-A-N-D-I-L-U-V. And all the info that you'll need is there for you. We are here for you. Until next time, get out there and kick some ass.